Today is May 19th, 2018. I'm Sarah Lang with the Oral History Program at UW-Madison. I'm talking with Ruth Lingen, book artist and UW alum and director of Pace Paper. We're at Memorial Library in Madison. So Ruth, I thought maybe we could start out with you talking a little bit about where you grew up and what you did before you got here in Madison.
I grew up in rural South Dakota.
Okay.
And I loved letter forms from an early age, actually, and was involved in helping my father collate his programs for church.
Okay.
Every Sunday. So the old quote about learning everything you needed to do in third grade is true in my case, as I collated many things that had to be stapled and folded when I was very young.
Uh-huh.
And I also went on through, in high school, I started painting billboards along the side of the road, the side of I-90 actually in South Dakota. So that was my first introduction to really liking letter forms.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. And then I went to University of South Dakota to study, started out as a painter. And it was, I believe, in my second year that I took printmaking with Lloyd Menard, and John Rousseau was teaching graphic arts there. So I actually really fell in love with setting type at that point and decided to switch majors.
Okay.
So I studied with John for several years there, for I think junior and senior year exclusively, and he was definitely my mentor and did a lot of printing of books, broadsides. The handset type that he had in that studio, or that was at the University of South Dakota at that time, was called Cooper Inline, and it's a very skinny version of Cooper Black. That's actually kind of nice looking. So I printed several books and broadsides in this esoteric version of Cooper.
Mm-hmm.
And John Rousseau was such an inspiration to me as a teacher, as a human. I remember very clearly we went to his house for a potluck dinner at the end of a semester, I think it was my senior year, and he had his own Vandercook press in his house. And I remember that made a huge impression on me about his dedication to what he was doing. And so much so that I took a summer class in papermaking at the University of Minnesota in Bemidji one summer. There was some kind of outreach class offered through the university. I think it was a month long, maybe. But that's where I first learned how to make paper, because John had been a paper maker. The paper making was not offered at USD at that time.
Mm-hmm.
But I did do some real homemade looking paper, and I did make enough paper to print a book edition in undergrad with that.
Okay, cool.
So, and it was really actually from taking Lloyd Menard's printmaking class was when I had my first taste of sort of what you would call collaboration with an artist, because he had a one credit class that you could sign up for, and it was basically not collaborating, it wasn't really called that then, because it was a bunch of students doing all the work as fast as they could for a visiting printmaker. So you were expected to drop all your classes and be in the studio nonstop when this artist came to town for usually, I think it was 1 to 2 weeks, if I remember correctly. And that was really exciting and really fun to see that happen. And that was the first time I'd heard of, people all working together in this community way to work towards sort of a finished goal.
Mm-hmm.
And that was that and working very closely with John were my favorite undergrad experiences.
Okay. Well, so then how did you come to be in Madison and study art in at UW-Madison? Was it because of John?
It was absolutely because of John. He told me multiple times, you should go to because I'd made so many books at that point. I don't know if it's so many, but I made some substantial books that had a lot of printed pages. And he said, if you want to continue in book arts and typography, you should go to Madison and go to grad school and study with Walter Hamady. And and he said, you're going to love Madison. It's going to be great. I remember he said, pack your long johns and your swimming suit. You're going to need everything when you go to Madison.
Uh-huh.
And I did. I took a year in between and worked as a commercial silkscreen printer in Omaha, Nebraska. And then after a year, I decided I applied, got in, and And I actually got to become Walter Hamady's teaching assistant. Okay. It was actually work study, but I worked in the type shop. I requested to work for him, and that was my very first job on campus, was working for Walter, mm-hmm. cleaning up the type shop.
Okay.
And I was very sort of intimidated by Walter at mm-hmm. first, because he was already very kind of, he had this career and he was known, and I kind of knew his work, but he had an interesting combo of humor and intellect, and he could be severe, but he could also be very, very sympathetic to me. I remember talking to him multiple times about, I had a lot of financial aid problems in grad school. So he was very, very, very helpful with me in securing, I got a scholarship for in-state tuition and a couple things like that that he helped me get.
Mm-hmm.
And he was my main advisor in graduate school. And so I spent all my 3 years that I was here, I was in the type shop more than any other place. And I actually loved the job, which was one of my main TA jobs,
mm-hmm.
or my work study jobs, I should say, was really just sorting all the pipe type and putting it away. I loved that. And that was when I really honed my eye to typography. Okay. I mean, I've definitely said this in other sort of, I don't know if I said this in a catalog, but at that point, my eye was so attuned to typography because Walter would famously make us set type. As we set type by hand, he would say that copper and brass thins, a brass thin is 1/72 of an inch, so that makes a copper one half the thickness of 1/72 of an inch. And he would say that is not delicate enough, not fine enough to really do beautiful letter spacing. So we were always cutting pieces of tissue paper
okay.
to put in between letters for that extra little bit. And I remember I was so tuned into typography and spacing them. When I would drive down the highway, I couldn't read billboards because the type spacing, I was like, what? What is that? You know, I really was so attuned to it at that time. It was also when you're learning and you have maybe more time to really focus on in that kind of detail on something. And Walter, as you know, is just an astounding typographer
mm-hmm.
and has an incredible eye. So I learned so much from him in the years that he was my mentor and instructor and so many other things.
Can you talk a little bit more about maybe the classes that you took when you were here?
Yes. I took a lot of lithography with Jack Damer as well. I took a lot of relief printing with Ray Gleckler. And I took offset printing with Bill Wiege and silkscreen printing with Dean Meeker and graphic design with Phil Hamilton. And what was interesting is Walter's book arts class was called graphics at that time. It wasn't okay. called book arts. So even though you made a book, you made broadsides, you made letterhead, you made other kind of typographical studies. And he also taught a really interesting class that I learned so much in. Can't remember the exact title, but it was making a one-of-a-kind book every week. So we would go into class on Tuesday. He would give us some kind of interesting sort of concept,
mm-hmm.
and then we would spend the whole week working like crazy and come back with something that had been designed, made, bound. It was often not printed, usually visual books.
Okay.
And I'm sure you've heard Walter's description of the book as a multiple and sequential picture plane unalterable by the viewer. So this was playing on that with fold-outs and pop-ups and blow-ups and all the kind of fun and funky things that we didn't do so much
mm-hmm.
in his formal like graphics class, where you really spent half the semester making an edition of, you know, very seriously considered books that had gone through multiple dummy stages and all kinds of proofing, typography and everything, usually making the paper for that. And of course I took paper making with Walter as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually, one of the funniest things, I know the building that the paper mill was in, which is long gone,
mm-hmm.
but there it was down in a basement. You must have heard about this by now, right? And mm-hmm. and the you know, the stuff would drop in, the dirt would drop off the ceiling into the beater. And
I didn't hear that part.
Yes. Yes, and I actually had my studio in the back of the paper mill in this very, you know, damp, wet basement. I had about an 8 by 10 foot little space down there. It was like being in a little cave. That was my quote studio in the first semester. So yeah, it was just Madison then for art students, you know, like us. We all got assigned a room in a house somewhere in a dumpy little rundown house, and it was actually really fun to have those kind of studios because it was somewhat communal and somewhat private. And I have seen, of course, the new building and the new studios, and they're very slick. And these were kind of the opposite of that, very funky and run down. And you could be very relaxed in them because you didn't have to worry about trashing anything, you know, just print on the walls or whatever you wanted to do. So it was super relaxed in that way, I would say. Other classes. Yes, Ray's relief class. He was a fantastic wood carver and wood engraver. And we learned so much in that class. Same with offset. And of course, everybody knows how famous Jack Damer is for, you know, he's had so many great lithography students, and they continue to do really amazing work, you know, the Wisconsin lithographers. So, what else? Art history class. Yes, I took a lot of art history, and I print studying at the what was then the Albium, going over there and looking at things. And actually, we made a number of trips to Chicago to go to the Art Institute and look at prints there for as part of art history classes that I took.
Were you, as part of your art degree, required to take certain art history courses, or did you just want to go in that direction?
I definitely, you know, I don't remember, but I did do a couple semesters because I was really interested in prints, because these were art history classes that were sort of focused on prints and works on paper. Yeah, I don't remember if they were requirements.
I just asked because when I was speaking with Marta, she mentioned art history too, so I thought maybe that was something that was like part of the program.
Of the program then, yeah, maybe it was.
And so you came to Madison already having made some books and wanting to study with Walter. Can you talk a little bit about how your bookmaking changed while you were here as a student?
Oh, absolutely. Well, Walter was, you know, he was so innovative in a way and very known because of his ideas about working with people, around him. Poets around him, poets that he knew, writers, artists, people that he had students that were in his classes do woodcuts and things for his books. So he was very, and that's, you know, he preached that and he practiced it, work with contemporary people, work with living artists, you know. He was not into the, you know, reprinting Shakespeare, you know, again in an updated version. He was into discovering new literature and extolling that. And so that was definitely, you know, as his students, we all wanted to do that too. So what was great about the classes, and this is, I could talk about this later, but people within the classes did collaborate a lot together. So it fostered a real community spirit in the classroom, with just setting type and making paper. I know I was involved in a number of projects where I would say, okay, we're going to go down to the paper mill and we're going to blitz out 200 sheets of paper this week that are all stenciled, and then it'll be enough to make this book edition out of. So somebody would come and help you do that, and then you would go help them do that. Okay. And it was much like in lithography, where whoever's printing the stone has a sponger, and then if they sponge for you, then you sponge for them. So it makes the job go so much faster. So that was definitely something that was happening a lot, and Walter encouraged that, you know, to work with other people and to figure out a way to bring your strengths together to make something better than the parts, bigger than the sum of the parts.
Sure. Well, while we're talking about it, can you think of any like projects that you were working on at that time, or relationships that you developed.
Yes, well, that brings up Kathy Kane, mm-hmm. because I had done a broadside with a man named Tom Pinkard, whose wife Susie was in our class, and he was a writer, Susie Schneider, and he was a writer, so I asked him if he would give me something to use for my broadside. Mm-hmm. So I did the broadside called The Big Field with handmade paper and then this Gil Sand set and printed, and then Kathy was working at Memorial Library, mm-hmm. and researching things, and she later on did run the Silver Buckle, but she worked at Silver Buckle earlier too, and she had run across this book with beautiful, really amazing and very strange medieval woodcuts, mm-hmm. of weird birds doing weird things and hunchback crazy characters, and so she loved them so much. So she decided to ask Tom Pinkard if he would write a fable, mm-hmm. based on these crazy pictures. And then she asked me to embellish it with more drawings. So it became this fantastic book that I still really, really love called The Fox and the Farmer, a group of moralless, more or less, tales. And they're very funny. They're very whimsical. But they're also very rooted in this specific place, mm-hmm. Madison, because the library was such a part of that, the resource of the library. And also all of us gaining this sort of enthusiasm about collaboration and the spirit of working with people. And that kind of, I can't remember if this was before or after, but I also collaborated with Walter Tisdale, who was, mm-hmm. in my typography classes, on this beautiful book called The Wallum Olum, and he set huge amounts of type, and I cut, I don't know how many dozens of tiny little linoleum cut sort of symbolic imagery that went with this Native American tale, mm-hmm. and yeah, so we would print, I'd print it at the shop, and then we'd print it at his house, and these projects, you know, you could always go in and work all night on your projects if you wanted. So,
yeah, speaking of, I was wondering, that class that you said that you developed a book in a week, like how many, yes. hours were you spending on that project?
Everybody would end up putting in, I don't know, you would almost always have to pull, if not an all-nighter, then close to one to do these things. Because, mm-hmm. it started out and you thought, oh, this won't be so bad to make a book in a week. But as the semester goes on and all your other classes are starting to, you know, get more intense too, mm-hmm. then, you know, and Walter wasn't going to drop his standards.
Sure.
So I still have some of those books today. Some of those books I made in that class, I really like. There's a certain vitality about, which I know from working with specific artists like Jim Dine, for example, that the speed and the energy and doing something quickly, you can feel that in the final result. And it's a very different kind of feeling from doing the end of semester book project where you come forward with your edition of 20 books and they're all going to be consistent. They're all going to probably be on your handmade paper. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I remember the first book I did in Madison and my first semester with Walter, and I only set type for the title page and the colophon, and the rest was all this sort of artistic, I don't know how to describe it now, it was an accordion book, but it was not type-centric, and it was not poetry and not writing. It was, mm-hmm. an extreme visual book, and I think, and I think, you know, Walter was a little surprised, but that was what I wanted to do at the time, so he got behind it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Were there times when he pushed you in a certain direction or suggested, or any of your teachers kind of suggest certain things that kind of got you going in one direction?
I think for Walter, he tended to, you know, we were required to have different dummies, mm-hmm. of the book at different stages. So he didn't sort of micromanage you as much as make suggestions as to maybe format, mm-hmm. type choices, and he would really kind of just make sure you were staying on track with your dummies and really let yourself be creative, and then hopefully you'd have pulled it off so you didn't, you know, weren't too worried about your final critique with the book. But you would have so many meetings leading up to that.
Okay.
Where you could change course or direction if you wanted to. Yeah, and I was trying to incorporate other printmaking into my artist books at that time. So they always included either litho, woodcut, or handmade paper. And then the typography on top of them. That's something I still do, actually. So.
And did you, with collaborating with some of your peers, did you kind of share work with each other and ask for advice from each other, or not so much?
Oh, absolutely. Because we were typesetting and is very labor intensive, mm-hmm. as is printing all this amount of text that you need for a book. So everybody was always in the studio late. Mm-hmm. So yeah, some people, I've definitely heard that they said, you know, they learned as much about printing from the other people in the studio mm-hmm. as they did about Walter. And I said, well, I don't know, because I was in the type shop all the time, because sure. that was also where I worked. So I definitely wouldn't say that was true. But Walter was, you know, he would give you the basics, the mechanical basics, and he would critique you. And I do remember as his work study person, I printed a card for him that was the Friends of Typography card to hand out. Have you ever seen one of those?
I don't know if I have.
I'll send you one.
Okay.
I found a stash of them that I still have. And Walter would hand them out to everybody at the end of semester. There was Friends of Typography, Friends of Papermaking, which you got after your semester of typography. And it was dedicated to the promotion of fine typography on this planet. And it was, I had to set this in justified 6-point caps. And Walter was famous for, you'd have to hand in your proofs mm-hmm. at any stage for the dummy. So you'd have to make proofs on tracing paper, give them to him, and he would go through and correct them with a red pencil. So I just, setting those things in that small caps. Mm-hmm. I mean, I had to reset the thing at least 3 or 4 times before he was happy with it. And so, 6-point type, there's not a lot of spacing that comes, you know, that it's so tiny that a copper is 1/10 of the body of it. So you just, yeah, that's very tricky.
It's interesting that you said that affected how you looked at.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's not good to be too attuned.
Well, what about your time working with Joe Wilford? Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Well, Joe, of course, was a Madison grad mm-hmm. as well, studied with Walter as well. And it was just a fluke that in my, I think it was my fourth or fifth semester at Madison, Walter was on sabbatical, and he came from New York to be the teacher of those classes for that semester. So I was his assistant, and he came in, and he really, you know, he was so full of energy, and he was very, very different from Walter, where Walter, everything was neat and tidy and perfect. Joe was much more messy. He was much more willing to, you know, shake things up in whatever way that meant. But he had shown us this slide talk of things, projects he was doing in New York, and he was making huge handmade paper pieces with Chuck Close in 24 shades of gray that were about 64 by 84 inches. And this just blew everyone's mind, you know, that he was doing this at the same time. This was early 80s. So he had come up with this technique in New York, and you know, that made a huge impression on me. And that was actually one of the big reasons why I moved out to New York, because I knew Joe was there, I knew he was doing these great projects, and I was determined to go out there and get a job working for him, which I eventually did. But yeah, so Joe was very, very tight. He's originally from Racine, Wisconsin. So he was very tied into the Madison community, head of the Madison Art Center, and mm-hmm. Had been head of the Madison Art Center before he moved out east. And yeah, that was how I connected with him. So he was my boss, and he became a real mentor to me too. And also was just equally full of ideas and inspiration, just a lot of fun to be around. Mm-hmm. He was a blast. He took us on so many field trips. We'd go visit all the paper mills and print shops, and we were constantly going. And Walter did that as well, too. Walter, we in his classes, we visited the children's library collection. We went to Fox River Paper Mill. We went, we'd go out to his, out to Perishable Press and Shadwell Mill and look at his studio. And a few other places I'm not remembering. Oh, we went to Appleton to see dandy rolls made for papermaking. So we went on a lot of great field trips, and just the whole history of papermaking in this state. Mm-hmm. You know, there's it's a very rich history. We had a paper chemist come in and talk to the class. And
that's cool.
Yeah. I still have my papermaking notes.
So. Do you?
Yeah, I do. I still have my original handouts from Walter.
Oh, that's great.
I should have brought them.
Yeah, that would be fun to see.
But and in terms of Madison, my first impression of actually coming to Madison was what a cosmopolitan town it was compared to, you know, where I was from. And, I mean, compared to Vermilion, it seemed like a big city almost. And just how many creative people were here. So, yeah, I was very impressed with Madison.
What did you, I know you were working so much on your projects. Did you guys hang out outside and, like, what did you do for fun?
Oh, are you kidding? Art students? Graduate art students? It was party, party, party. You know, it was nonstop, you know, house parties and studio parties and openings. And, yeah, it was just a lot of hanging out. And as I said, because so many of the grad students, what's now, you know, around Johnson Street and that whole area were all these rundown houses that were just packs of people. So it was a sort of smaller scale vibe of like not intimacy necessarily, but more accessibility, I think, than when you come into big like fortress like buildings. And of course, you know, if you were working in 6451, you know, in the art building, and you've been inside there. Mm-hmm. Of course, it's a fortress. So I think anyone who worked in there, you know, you kind of bonded because you couldn't tell what the weather was like or any. You know, it's a very strange building to be in, but for art people. But there was a lot of bonding that went on, and I know Walter used to tell us he hosted a few he would host a picnic every, I want to say once a year out at his farm. And he told us, he said, this is such a special group of people right now at this time. And, you know, we would just think, oh, yeah, right. You know, he says that to everyone. But I think it was really true because so many people in that at that time did go on to continue sort of really working. You know, Kevin Henke's went on, Walter Tisdale went on, Patty Scobie. So many people from that group. Marta, and a lot of people did end up working for Walter on projects. I know Marta did. I was sure that that was not a good idea to work for on Walter's book project. So I stuck to just helping him out in the classroom.
And why did you think that that wasn't a good idea?
Well, I guess it was Walter definitely has a sense of perfectionism. And I could see, you know, wanting to achieve that in the classroom, I always kind of felt like his work at Perishable Press was a very separate thing, and he did talk about that as it being such a separate entity. So, I mean, I just, since I already worked for him on campus, I just, and also he never asked me to help him out on anything, so. But, anyway.
But you worked with Joe. Could you talk a little bit about, like, you were working with him here first?
Yes, and then... one semester. The semester he came. So I was the shop, you know, tech, basically. So I kept the presses oiled up, put the type away, showed the students where all the type was, cleaned up. Gave when Joe came, another fun thing that he did was we had, the Friends of Typography didn't have any money. So Walter... or Joe wanted to raise money for it by printing a Friends of Typography cookbook. So he got all the paper donated. I don't know if you've ever seen that. It's really a riot. So everybody in the class printed one or two recipes, letterpress, and then we sold copies. They sold out. And we raised money. I don't know what the, can't remember if we bought some type and then threw the end of semester party. I know Friends of Typography like to throw little sort of parties in the type shop where people could come in and see your books. Mm-hmm. So everybody would lay their books out. You'd have like a little open house with refreshments, not alcoholic, but it was just nice. So you mm-hmm. can invite people in, they could see things, and then prospective students could come in and also see the type shop. And it was always very clean and very tidy. Yeah.
How often did you have students, prospective students coming in, kind of like whenever?
Well, it was always end of semester when that happened. Yeah. And I think it was more a word of mouth thing.
Okay.
Yeah. But did I mention Kevin Henkes? He was an undergrad and he was in my class. So we definitely, and what was another thing that was done between students a lot is we traded. I have a lot of books that I traded. Mm-hmm. And that was the beauty of doing editions. Mm-hmm. So when I've taught book arts too, you know, with classes, I definitely encourage them to do that too, because it's a great way to get a small collection of hand-printed books.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's very cool.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, do you want to talk any more about some of your other collaborations? I mean, we talked a little bit about your working with other UW students while you were here.
Mm-hmm.
But you, as you like moved on in your career later, you continued mm-hmm. to collaborate with all kinds of people.
I have, yes, both not as much as somebody like Walter, but I've collaborated with a lot of visual artists mm-hmm. and doing both artist books and then sort of, I don't want to say fine press, or not quite fine press, but hand printed writing with artists. So yeah, quite a few projects doing that. One of my favorite projects to this day is a book I did in, I want to say 2009, called Led Almost by My Tie, with poems by Jeremy Sigler and images by Jessica Stockholder. She's a sculptor who teaches at the University of Chicago. And I just really liked her sculptural work, and I had been trying to publish these books that had a very sculptural aspect to them. Mm-hmm. If they weren't complete sculptures, they were very physical kinds of books. I really liked sort of the book as an object, but mm-hmm. having more function than that, and rather than just being a sculptural object, having that aspect to it while still conveying whatever you were deciding to put inside. In this case, it was a collection of 12 poems by a poet, and then a sort of visual element that runs through from Jessica Stockholder, where she also culled words from Jeremy's poem to make her own poem at the end of the book. So it's each half page of a poem will be interleaved with images of hers on sort of transparent kind of films and papers that overlap and cover the poetry and also sort of reveal. And it's a very, her work lies on the edge of painting and sculpture. And I feel like this was a book where it all came together. And it's still one of my favorite books. It mm-hmm. was about 2 years in the making. Not every day, but it, as most, you know, we all rejoice if we can do a limited edition book in 1 year, one less than one calendar year. It's a cause for celebration. Mm-hmm. But in this case, it really confirmed this feeling about collaboration that we talked about with Walter, you know, back in those days. And it was putting your heads together. You really get a better thing in the end when you've collaborated, I think that's really true, because you're using your heart and your brain, everybody is, in the project that wants to be in on it. So for Jessica, she came up with this incredible wall sculpture that the book sits on, and the text block of the book is glued to a piece of wood, and then the piece of wood sits on the sculpture on the wall, and it's a beautiful sculpture. But then the book itself is 90 some pages that is so colorful and so visual. And we just, and what I like when I feel like a project is really successful is when you look at it and it feels very fresh, like it could have just been done. Sometimes you look at a print, even of Albrecht Dürer, and you think, wow, it looks so juicy and so good. It could have just been printed yesterday. And so to have something that you're so happy with later, because I tend to find the flaws and say, oh, I don't like that so much anymore. But so it's fun to have a couple projects. That's one that I still like a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I am working on a couple projects right now. And I've done a quite a number of books for other publishers and foundations. Mm-hmm. One of a project I really enjoyed was called The Piddling Pup, and it was an unpublished book of Alexander Calder's. Again, this is exactly what, you know, Walter didn't have us do, what I was talking about. This is probably the only book I've published that was, I didn't publish this, it was published by the Calder Foundation, so I decided to print it, and it's Alexander Calder's grandson had this manuscript that Calder had worked on drawings for, and it had never been printed, so mm-hmm. I thought it would be fun to help him print that, mm-hmm. and bring these, so we sort of researched this, Sandy Rower and I researched this, and made the book look in paper, in typography, in binding, with materials that would have been around in 1925 when he had made the drawings for it, and then he set sail for Paris and it never got done, so okay. Yeah, that was a fun project to do too. And yes, I've never really counted the number of book projects I've done. It's been a lot, but I mm-hmm. I can never decide if it's so few, so I never have sat down and done that to count.
I bet it's a lot.
It's a lot, yeah. But I feel like it's better I don't know, because Walter, you know, Walter Hamady famously, Perishable Press, has number all it, so I'm very aware of the fact that he's done, you know, 124, whatever the volume number of editions, and mm-hmm. I'm way short of that, so.
Well, I wanted to ask you a little bit about how your collaborations come to be. Like, do you mm-hmm. reach out to artists you want to work with? Do they reach out to you? How does
Yes, it goes both ways. It definitely goes both ways. I've had a lot of people, writers and artists, reach out to me and say they'd like to do a project. And it's usually just based on, you know, I just go with my gut on mm-hmm. this kind of thing. I have a project in the works now that I've been struggling to get going with for 4 years now. I have a couple of those that, for different reasons, health, you know, there's always different parties involved. So this one's had a number of people change their mind, blah, blah, blah. But it's been both ways, and I really have to do a lot of research and read a lot of work of if a writer's involved, or really mm-hmm. go through a very comprehensive research period, because when I commit to it, then I also don't want to sort of micromanage in mm-hmm. a weird way. If I commit to this person who's going to write something, then I want to let them kind of write it with, you know, within bounds. I've sort of nitpicked a couple things, but I really don't like to do that once I've committed to the project. I like to let the project then develop in a very organic way. Mm-hmm. So it starts exactly as Walter taught us, with the dummies and sort of a vague idea of how you're doing. And then I do feel like the project sort of takes you down a road where, you know, you try out a lot of ideas. As I said, this thing I'm working on now, which I do hope gets done. It's been in the works for years, and it's gone through so many different iterations already that it's, you know, I hope it's not going to lose steam before it's done, because there's a definite arc of energy. And in the case of that, of the Stockholder Sigler book I was telling you about, that was an amazing thing, because even though we had put so much energy in it and had done this finessing of every single page multiple times, when you look at the book now, the evidence of that is not there. So, and I have worked with other artists like that. For example, working on Klaus Oldenburg prints, they are very, very meticulously done. But when you look at the print, it looks very free and very simple and very easy. Mm-hmm. So that's a big victory, I think, mm-hmm. if you can have something not look labored over. Yeah. So in terms of, yeah, as I said, I do a lot of research, and then I'll have kind of a vague idea of what I want to do. In the case of a book I did in a few years ago with Edward Hirsch poems and etchings by Glenn Goldberg, I had access to 8 copper plates made at when Glenn Goldberg did a residency with a friend of mine, Julia DiMario, out at Sitka Center for Art and Science in Oregon. So I knew he had these 8 really beautiful plates, and I said, you know, if I help you guys do it, you know, can I use the plates in a book? So in that case, that was only the second time, going all the way back to The Fox and the Farmer, where the images created the book. a book with text that looks like a traditional book. So after I had these images, then I spent months. I called it speed reading poetry on the subway because I was searching for something very specific, and I didn't find it right off the bat, but I found something by Edward Hirsch, this poet who I didn't know at the time, but is also the head of the Guggenheim Foundation. Very, very intimidating man. And I, you know, called his agent, which I often reach out to people that through their dealers, their agents, because for me, it's about the project. It's not so much, you know, in grad school, you just had a pool of friends right there doing the same thing and you could choose from them. But now I'm in a different stage. So it's like I want to more consider the steps I'm taking with these projects. So in that case, I had multiple meetings with Edward Hirsch where he was not enthused about the project at all. Okay. He said, I don't see how this fits together. This is not a good pairing. And I was persistent. I had another meeting. He said, let me think about it. And then he did decide that he saw how I was trying to connect these things in a sort of existential way and agreed to do the project. We had a reading and a book sort of promotion party, whatever, book signing, not at Cooper Union. Mm-hmm. So that was really fun. And he read the poems. And at the reception afterwards, it was quite fun because he was telling everybody, I didn't see it. And now I think the book is fantastic. You know, so that was a hard sell. And sometimes it is. And I have asked a lot of people that have said no. So it's like anything in life, you know, you sort of meander around until you find the right path. For every project, that's one of the things I really love about bookmaking, is you kind of, you know, you start the project and it zigs along or it zags or it's a very straight line, but it's kind of its own little world and it's its own set of experiences that go into it. So I really like that part of it.
So how do you manage your time and the projects, because they vary so much and you are relying on other people too for their input?
Right.
How does that work?
Ooh, that's a good question. I mean, a lot of it for me is based on, I've had a lot of experience in printing and the logistics of these kind of projects. So I do understand the sort of time parameters that are needed for things. Some things are easy, but most things become very complicated as you go along on them. And so bringing other people into the mix, every person you bring in, this collaboration I'm trying to do right now involves three other people. Mm-hmm. So even scheduling a meeting becomes this whole thing. So it just, yeah, it takes forever. So you have to know that going in, or you can get discouraged. Mm-hmm. And certainly movies, you know, if you were in filmmaking or something, I would think that'd be one of the biggest things, is just that time hurdle. Mm-hmm. But that, and just making sure, I like to kind of have a small team for these book things where I really know who's going to commit to the project. I have a couple different people that help me in specific things like binding. I have a young woman who helps me with all my folding and trimming, stuff like that. So when you line up the right people for the projects, I think then it really comes together in a very sort of natural way.
And you mentioned that there have been occasions where people declined to be
right.
part of a project. Okay. What about on the flip side, what would make you say no if somebody approached you? Like,
oh, that has happened to me, because uh-huh. I've been approached by a couple different writers and artists who wanted me to do projects. And when I looked at their body of work, I have to tell you, I know for writing, when you hand set somebody's writing, you have to set it over and over, and you have to proof it, and you have to. I was involved in a William Kentridge and Wisława Szymborska collaboration book published by Dudenay. So I did the typography for that book. And I can tell you, I as I was setting the poems, I thought, well, these seem very simple. And by the time I finished, I was madly in love with the poems and the poet. So you go through this process with the work where you better start out really liking the work and feeling strongly about it, because it's going to put you through the paces of understanding it and sort of getting lost in it as you're going along. And I did with, I can think of a couple people, writers and a couple artists, when I looked through their work and I just didn't feel the kind of excitement and and sort of thinking about the potential there, like how you could take that and turn it into something bigger. I kind of didn't feel that. So I do feel like I have to go with really people or work that I feel really strongly about. I can't feel even a little bit ambivalent about it because it's just, it's too much work.
Yeah. Well, what about your role at PACE? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. That involves the things that I, you know, learned in Madison, paper making, printmaking, and typography. So in this studio at PACE Paper, it's an aspect of PACE Prints. So we do different kinds of printing and then all many, many kinds of paper. So we, at this point, I wouldn't say we make volumes of paper, as Walter Hamady taught us to make hundreds and hundreds of sheets for all of our books. But we have explored so many different creative processes in papermaking that we are sort of taking that language, I think, and really pushing it. I've worked on now 57 editions and about 70-some monoprints with an artist named Leonardo Drew, who is a sculptor who does phenomenal installation works that are very monumental, large scale. And we have pushed the medium into this crazy thing that I would not have ever believed. And actually, it's really starting to get a lot of attention now. This body of work, it's going to be the a whole traveling show next year, starting at Mount Holyoke College and traveling around. And he's been on, he was featured in Hand Papermaking Magazine, ArtNet Magazine, Artsy, so Art 21. He's been featured a lot, and especially this work we've done. So I do feel like the ideas that I got here in Madison were so important for that frame of thinking about collaboration and about just opening yourself up to working with other people and just sort of seeing what happens.
So at PACE then, you're kind of doing what you were explaining, like finding artists that you want to collaborate with.
Exactly. But it's not, because we are part of PACE Editions, we're not open to the public for somebody to just come in and do their project. These are artists that have to be sort of vetted, and they have an association, if not with PACE Gallery, PACE Prints, then with, you know, somebody in this realm of sort of the art world that, you know, that they have to be mature artists, basically. Sure. I mean, we work with some emerging artists, but it is, we work with a lot of established artists. And they're usually complicated projects. And the cost, because we're based in New York City, you know, it's expensive. So there's always this financial thing that you have to take into account there that I don't have to think about so much when I publish my book projects. So,
and can you talk a little bit more about how you got into the role at PACE?
Well, that was me when I moved to New York, and Joe Wilfer actually was setting up a print studio for PACE Prints. He previously, all the printing that of editions that I remember distinctly, it was Julian Schnabel editions they started out doing in the 80s. And Joe had figured out that he could set up a print shop and maybe do things in-house, and it would be just as, you know, it would be just less expensive, I think, than farming out these big projects that were being done in Europe and elsewhere. So he set up a print shop in Soho, and I sort of went down. He was just getting it going, and I worked all kinds of odd jobs, freelance, and I was actually at that time a letterpress printer at Bound & Company Stationers, which is was and still is actually a 19th century print shop as part of the South Street Seaport Museum in New York. And so I would go up there, I worked there 4 days a week, and then I would go up faithfully every Friday and say to Joe, hi, do you need to hire me? I'm available if you need help. So I did help him freelance on projects. Okay. And the first project I helped on was a Louise Nevelson cast paper piece that I'd go in once every 2 weeks and I'd make 12 pieces in these plaster molds and I'd turn the fans on and then I'd come back 2 weeks later and make more. But so this went on for a number of months and then he said, okay, I think we might have a job for you. So I started working for Joe. He was so much fun to be around, and where Joe was the center of the center of the world. And he knew there were a lot of Wisconsin people in New York.
Okay.
So everybody hung out at this local bar, and it was the Wisconsin Mafia in New York City. So there was a lot of, you know, friendly faces that sort of congregated around Joe and the workshop. So that began as a full-time thing in, I want to say, 1986. And we worked with Alan Shields, who had been here working with Bill Wiege.
Okay.
at his paper mill, and Joe as well, mm-hmm. when Joe had Upper U.S. paper mill and out at Bill Wiege's ranch farm. So that was sort of, yeah, so I started really working there for Pace and stopped working at the Seaport then.
Mm-hmm. And so how long have you been at Pace?
Well, aside from a few years when I went out west to teach and a few years when I was out in Long Island working exclusively on some Chuck Close projects, that's the rest of my years. So it's been 25 years or so. So
that's great.
In different capacities. So actually, Joe died in 1995, and then I sort of stepped into his position then. Mm-hmm. We had closed the paper mill. Then I was out west, as I mentioned, went out mm-hmm. and taught for a while, and then when I came back, that was 2007, and I made some Chuck Close editions on my own, and then my boss, Richard Solomon, decided to reopen a paper mill in Brooklyn.
Okay.
So that started in early 2009 is when we really got up and going, so that's what I've been doing since then.
Okay. Can you talk a little bit about your teaching? You said you taught the book arts.
Yes.
How did you approach teaching, and I guess how did you get the gig?
Well, I taught here in Madison for a year, right after I graduated from grad school. So what happened then is Walter got a sabbatical, and somehow, I think it was the deadline for posting the ad for the job had just passed or something, so very few people applied, so I got it somehow. So mm-hmm. I was straight out of grad school. That was an interesting experience, I have to say, to have had all these other professors for my teacher the semester before, and then to be going to these meetings and sitting in on these you know, meetings mm-hmm. with all these people that had just been my professors. So that was the year I learned diplomacy, I have to say. So there were rifts within certain teachers that you had to be able to manage. And as I said, I was the youngest person teaching there because I was straight out. And I did have students that were older than me, so that was mm-hmm. that was interesting too. But of course, coming straight out from under Walter's tutelage, mm-hmm. I felt very equipped to teach. I taught the graphics, I taught papermaking, and I taught lettering.
Okay.
Which at that time was, when I taught it, it was going through all kinds of calligraphy, and then it was constructed caps and really what you'd call graphic design, but mm-hmm. done by hand with pen and ink and brushes. And that was a class I really liked teaching, and I really liked doing all those things too.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my first year of teaching. And then I taught at Whitman College from 2005 to 2007, and I taught book arts and printmaking. So my book arts classes, I was very, very tough on the students, I'll tell you. I made them do so many projects, and the printmakers too. So, but I think they loved it. I got actually a number of letters from students years afterwards saying how the skills they'd learned in their book arts class they had used consistently. You know, just things like that thing seemed so simple, like folding paper correctly, handling mm-hmm. paper correctly, tearing it, you know, making signatures, thinking about book structures. So book arts really is kind of my pet class to teach, I have to say. I really love it. And there's a lot to know there. But I think also there's a real excitement for the students because they progress from, you know, basic typography, more complicated typography, image with typography, and then the book project. So they come out with something that's very substantial, and a lot of them use this to apply for other things. Like, they used it for scholarships. One of my advanced students got a semester in Japan, actually two of them, because they had done such beautiful complex books, and then they made these wrappers and to apply for this Japanese scholarship, which they got. So it does give you a lot of presentation skills, mm-hmm. which are important. So
I wondered, I've been asking artists if they have a definition for an artist book, because I think that people encounter that, probably people who, you know, don't know about artist books.
Right.
When they find out you're a book artist, they must ask you, well, what does that mean?
Right.
Do you have you thought about that lately?
Oh, that is very good, because I always just requote Walters, which is the multiple and sequential picture plate, unalterable by the viewer. Well, I guess I would say something very close to that, maybe something that can be manipulated a little more by the viewer, but I think an artist book is something that when you finish, it's not strictly about the information it's conveying. It's really something that can be seen as such a beautiful object in and of itself. And it isn't necessarily the physicality, but it could be the combination of what it's giving you intellectually, visually, and the sum of all those parts that give you this feeling that could be as strong as viewing, you know, a painting, sculpture, anything mm-hmm. like that. It's not just, you know, I've made it through my paperback and now yeah. off it goes. But that will be a good project for me to come up with a very concise definition, and I'm going to think about that.
Okay. That sounds good. Is there anything else that we haven't talked about that you want to touch on?
No, I would just say that I really loved my years in Madison, mm-hmm. and that's why I'm back here visiting. I get back from time to time, and I just do feel like it was a very powerful place for me to be at that time, and I just got so much from my time here, and it was just really fantastic. So many wonderful people, and continue to be here too, I think. So it was just really a great, excellent experience.
It's nice that you guys stay in touch, too.
Yeah. So.
Well, thank you, Ruth. I appreciate it.